Last Wednesday, I had the privilege of giving the address at the memorial service for Roz Taylor. Roz Taylor was the daughter of Millicent Slack, who many of you will remember as a faithful member of this congregation for a number of years. And Roz visited Millicent regularly and attended worship with her mum when she was here. Got to know her during that time. Roz has been suffering from motor neurone disease for a number of years, and during the last year turned her attention to planning funeral arrangements, at the heart of which was she wanted an address given on the subject, "Who is my neighbor?" And for good or ill, the lot fell on me. So I got to travel to East Yorkshire and enjoy the big skies, the green expanse, the bitterly cold wind, and a church with more holes in than bricks. But it was a good occasion. It was good to be there. That is a roundabout way of saying, why write two sermons when you can get away with one? So on the assumption that none of you were there last Wednesday, and I don't see a familiar face, if you were, just keep quiet. You're going to hear much of what they heard last week on the subject of who is my neighbor. We just read the parable of the Good Samaritan. It's as well known a Bible story as any other. The young man coming to Jesus, asking him what he might do to inherit eternal life. And Jesus asking him, well, what does the law say? In effect, you know the answer before you ask the question. Why are you asking me? Answer your own question. And so he does. He trots out the pat answer. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus commends him for his answer. You've done well. You've cracked it. Nothing more to be said. If it wasn't for the fact that he was such a pushy young man, we wouldn't have had the story which is now so well known to us. Because that pushy young man wanted to make a point. And so he says to Jesus, well, that's all well and good, but who is my neighbor? And Jesus tells the story. The end of which Jesus himself asks a question of the young man. Which of these three proved neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers? To which the reply was, the one who showed mercy to him, the one who had compassion on him. Who is my neighbor? Anyone we come across deserving our help and our attention. And of course, all of us will have a knee-jerk reaction to that question, who is my neighbor? But are we prepared to ask ourselves, go a little further, probe, well, who is my neighbor and who is my neighbor? The parable dares us to confront such questions as these. It dares us to go beyond the cozy comfort zone that we might describe as our neighborhood. Now, that might be in terms of the area in which we live. It might be in terms of the people with whom we routinely interact, those with whom we have interests held in common. That is our neighborhood. The gated communities in which we live. Yet Jesus challenges us in this story. He says to us, all well and good, but it takes courage to cross the road. That's what the Good Samaritan did. He found the courage to cross the road. But before we go there, let's not forget that the most blatant example of disregard as far as the man in need was concerned, was shown by the one who crossed the road and then crossed back again. So it's not enough just to cross the road, have a good look, wring one's hands, and then cross back again. No, once we've crossed the road, there's no going back. If we are to be a neighbor, this is what is demanded of us. The reason Ros Taylor wanted the emphasis on this story in her Thanksgiving service was because she was someone who had given much of her life to voluntary service. And there's a sense in which those who are prepared to volunteer their services, skills, talents, time, energy, and all of these are far more valuable than our money. We need to remember that when we think about showing compassion, extending mercy, proving neighbor to others, that the skills, the talents, the time, and the energy that we have, far more valuable than our money. Volunteers are the epitome of what it means to prove neighbor to others. Voluntary service is service for its own sake. It's what we can give immediately, impartially. We can immerse ourselves in it. We can engage directly. We can champion the cause of others. We can represent their needs. We can advocate their cause. We can help them out. We can encourage them. We can do all of these things as a volunteer if we're prepared to cross the road so to do. Doing what needs to be done for the person or persons who need something to be done for them, which is beyond their doing for themselves. But the story says more than that. It tells us that it's about taking a risk, being prepared to risk life and limb. Robbers had laid in wait for travelers, unwary travelers along the road. They'd attacked one man. Wouldn't they attack another? Take a risk. Risk life and limb. Perhaps be prepared to put one's reputation on the line. Perhaps being prepared to be criticized, even vilified, for having associated ourselves with those about whom wider society has rushed to judgment. That's what being a good neighbor is all about. Being prepared to take criticism and vilification just because there are those in need whom society has determined are beyond the pale. A society bedeviled as it is by narrow political and, dare we say it, even ecclesiological self-interest. A society which is loath to identify with those who are in the most need of the compassion of which Jesus spoke. Sunday night television has a way of exposing the cultural divide which is at the heart of English society. And so this evening, you will divide. Some of you will watch Les Miserables, as you've been watching over the last 5 weeks and waiting for tonight's final episode. And some of you, like me, will be watching Vera. Again, it's the last episode, and we like Vera. Vera is a detective story based in the northeast of England, blender breathing and all of that. If you haven't watched it, you should. I get the sense this is more Les Miserables than Vera, but there we are. East Yorkshire was 99% Les Miserables, and the one chap who came up to me at the end and whispered in my ear, "I watch Vera." But in the novel itself, Victor Hugo gives us a definition of Les Miserables, and it's all to do with our understanding of people who are in need, why they are in need, how they got themselves in the condition that they are, and how careful we might have been to avoid it if only we'd realized it. Hugo describes them thus. If they had had a different neighbor one less self-absorbed and more concerned for others, a man of normal charitable instincts. Their desperate state would not have gone unnoticed. Their distress signals would have been heard, and perhaps they would have been rescued by now. Certainly, they appeared utterly depraved, corrupt, vile, and odious. But it is rare for those who have sunk so low not to have been degraded in the process. And there comes a point, moreover, where the unfortunate and the infamous are grouped together, merged in a single fateful world. They are Les Miserables, the outcasts, the underdogs. And who is to blame? Is it not the most fallen who have most need for charity? Is it not the most fallen who have most need for charity? The unfortunate and the infamous brought together in need, and who are we to divide them? We have the privilege of living in, sharing the life of, indeed ministering in the midst of what is itself a privileged community. Hampstead Garden Suburb is an accurate description of it. But populated by people who one senses do have a heart for others. And our task as a church is to encourage them and us together to be prepared to cross the road. And so it is good that last Tuesday evening, as on a number of Tuesdays during this time of the year, our church hall is open and hosting a night shelter for the homeless. And it's good that it isn't just church people who are involved in the running of the night shelter, but volunteers from the wider community have been prepared to join us and share with us in this work. It may be that for some of them, and indeed us, one's only other exposure to the plight of the homeless might have been to stumble over them in a doorway outside a department store in central London. Indeed, we may even on occasion have crossed the road, not to help, but to avoid them. It's good that those whom we would otherwise seek to avoid, we have company with them, share something of their life, are able to prove neighbour to them. It was good that last harvest, whilst yes, we collected what we usually collect, we also collected sanitary products, packed up and delivered to local schools as part of the Red Box Project, combating period poverty, something that remains very real for so many families today. I said on Wednesday, it was likely that that had been the first time that the word periods had been mentioned from the pulpit at Hampstead Garden Suburb. As I looked out on the congregation on Wednesday, I got the sense it was the first time the word periods had been mentioned from the pulpit of Howden Minster. Well, maybe they're talking more about it now. And maybe even they are beginning to think about the need that is not so easily talked about, but is so very much part of the life of so many families. It was good that we were prepared to cross the road to engage with those who have this particular need. I didn't know Roz Taylor that well, and as we've said, only came to know her because of her mother's involvement with this church. When I was told that she had died and circumstances surrounding her death, I wrote to her husband, thinking about the one word that might capture the essence of her personality. And I hit upon the word feisty. There was a feistiness about her. And it struck me that feistiness is a necessary quality for anyone who is willing to engage as a volunteer, seeking to combat the many societal ills that are part of our day-to-day life. You need a degree of feistiness to confront the bureaucracy which prevents so many people from being helped when so many would otherwise want to help and when so many others could be helped. Thank God for feisty individuals. The parable of the Good Samaritan is a straightforward story, but nevertheless deserves to be retold. One person has summed it up like this, and I finish with these words. We instinctively tend to limit those for whom we exert ourselves. We would do it for people like us and for people whom we like. Jesus will have none of that. By depicting a Samaritan helping a Jew, Jesus could not have found a more forceful way to say that anyone at all in need, regardless of race, politics, class, and religion, is your neighbor. Not everyone is our brother and sister in faith, but everyone is our neighbor, and we must love our neighbor.